Galatians 5, verse 22. This should be a verse we all know pretty well, but I'm going to go ahead and read it anyway. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. All these are very good qualities that we need to live by. But tonight I want to focus on one of these, which is kindness. Now, a lot of those go hand in hand with kindness, but I think kindness is a lesson we can all learn from, as it can be hard to, it sounds like an easy concept, but it can be hard to remain kind and do the things we need to. I want to start off tonight with a little story I heard. Some of you may know, because some of you may have went, but last Thursday night, the ABS junior senior class had our annual banquet that we went to. And it was a great night, and everybody had fun, but our guest speaker this year was Mr. Casey Harbin, and he gave a lesson that was very much in line with what I wanted to talk about tonight, and he told this story, so I'm going to kind of steal it from him, but I think it's a good story. So if you've heard it, you know, some of you have, it'd probably be good to hear it again, but just bear with me as I get through it. So our story tonight starts off in the late 1800s with a man called Joseph Merrick. Now, Joseph Merrick had a very rough life growing up, as when he was 5 years old, he started developing this condition where he got severe, like, deformities all over his body. His face swelled up really big. One of his arms was malformed and all just deformed and out of whack. And then he had another arm that was just a normal arm. And he just looked grotesque and just was in a bad way. And so as a result, his mom, who I don't think was his biological mom, but she basically kicked him out on the street and made him go out on his own at the age of 5. So he just scraped by all his life, kind of doing whatever he could to get by. And obviously, people were harsh and made fun of him all the time. And he actually ended up seeking out a man to kind of go out on the road as a freak show, and that used that to make his money, basically just to display himself, and people would pay to see this freak of nature that he was. And so that's where a man called Frederick Trevis comes into the story. Now, Frederick Trevis was a world-renowned doctor. He worked at the London Hospital, which was basically like the Vanderbilt or the UAB of England at the time. It was very, very high class, like kings and princes and queens and all the nobility would go there to get treated and everything. So this man, one day after work, he was leaving the hospital to head home, and nearby there was an abandoned warehouse that had been abandoned for a while, and Mr. Trevis saw a crowd of people kind of gathering outside of this warehouse, and it piqued his interest because he knew it was abandoned, so he decided to investigate and see what all was going on. So he kind of fought his way through the crowd and pushed his way through, and up front he saw a poster advertising, "Come see the Elephant Man." And basically these people were, Mr. Joseph Merrick had gotten the nickname the Elephant Man, and these people were paying their money to basically see this freak show and basically point and make fun of him. So the curiosity got the better of him, and he paid his money and went in and sat down. And when he walked in, he saw this man covered in a sheet, sitting on a stool in just like the dark room. And so everybody kind of files in and gets settled down and sits down, and a man comes out and starts talking to the thing under the curtain like an animal, basically, and like a dog, and he yells out like, take off the cover or whatever. And so they yank it off, and of course everyone's in shock and poking and making fun and just being just mean in general. And so all that kind of goes over, and Mr. Trevis kind of obviously feels bad for the guy, and he's very interested in what is wrong with him. So he comes up afterwards to the Elephant Man, who, from what I understand, could barely talk with his malformities and everything, and handed him his card and basically was like, come to the hospital. We can try and figure out something to do with you. You can live there and everything. But he didn't really listen to him at the time. He kind of went on about with the rest of the tour and everything, and they went all around through Europe. And then he kind of fell off the map, and no one really heard about it anymore. And what had happened was the manager who he had went to basically sell himself as a freak show had taken all of the proceeds and all the money that he had made over the tour and for himself and just left him with nothing. So this man who was already crippled beyond belief and had basically nothing now had even less and had literally nothing. So he found his way back to London on a train, and as he got off the train at the substation in London, people were joking, making fun, and poking fun at him, and just everybody was jumping on board, and he'd finally had enough. So he fought his way through the crowd and ran downstairs to a bathroom and just started crying and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And he looked into the mirror and said, through the tears, "I'm not an animal, I'm a man." So a little bit later on, he's still down there, and a policeman comes down and basically finds him, and he's like trying to console him and everything, and he finds in his coat that card that Mr. Trevis had given him. So he takes him to the hospital. Mr. Trevis sets him up in a room that he's now allowed to live in the hospital, and they're kind of studying him and seeing what he can do. So he gives him a place to live and basically starts taking care of him. And he kind of becomes a celebrity in England. He, I think, got to meet the Queen and got to meet some other nobility, and I may be getting that wrong, but he basically got his life kind of turned around for at least as good as it could be for his condition and everything. And the really sad part of the story is one time he was meeting this woman, and I don't really remember what she did or anything, but basically she came up and shook his hand and was like, "Hello, I'm so-and-so," and everything. It was just, you know, what we would consider a proper greeting in our day and age. And he just sunk down to his knees and started sobbing. And Mr. Trevis was wondering, he's like, "Well, what's wrong?" And Mr. Merrick, he said, "That's the first time a woman has ever touched me or been kind to me in my entire life." So that's a really sad story with kind of a happy ending. But the point of all that was to show that one act of kindness that you may not think much about can really turn a person's life around, and you don't really know what they're going through, but that one thing may actually really brighten their day. And as Christians, God expects us to be these kind, outgoing people that really try and help people out and go that extra mile to be kind. Let's turn to John 4:6-30. John 4:6-30. This is also another story we all know pretty well. But it's important to keep in mind as we read this that the Jews and the Gentiles during this time period were about as far apart as you could get, and they pretty much despised each other. So what we're about to read here is pretty astounding. All right, starting in verse 6. "Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, 'Give me a drink.' For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, 'How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans.' Jesus answered and said to her, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, "Give me a drink," you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you go to get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?' Jesus answered and said to her, 'Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw.' Jesus said to her, 'Go call your husband and come here.' The woman answered and said, 'I have no husband.' Jesus said to her, 'You have well said, I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you have now is not truly your husband, in that you spoke truly.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. Jesus said to her, Woman, believe me, the hour is coming where you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know that the Messiah is coming, who is called Christ, and when he comes, he will tell us all things. Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. At this point, his disciples came, and they marveled that he talked with a woman. Yet no one said, What do you seek, or why are you talking with her? The woman then left her water pot, went her way into the city, and said to the men, Come, see a man who told me all the things I ever did. Could this be the Christ? Then they went out of the city and came to him. So here we see Jesus in a situation that would have been common and very much expected at the time. For, you know, he's parched after his journey and he's wanting a drink, and here comes this Samaritan woman up to the well, and most people of that time period would have just turned a blind eye and pretended like the other person wasn't even there. But he sees this as an opportunity to really make a difference, and he just starts up a conversation with her and turns it into something that really helped her, and also she went and told other people and it helped them as well. So we can always, as Christians, be looking for opportunities like this to just help people wherever they need it. And just random encounters that you have can really turn into something special if you want it to. And another thing to point out, like I said, was the Jews and the Samaritans. They're about as far apart as you could be. And that's a good lesson for us, is we're supposed to treat people regardless of race, color, gender, past differences, how they've treated you, you know, before, whatever. We're supposed to treat them kind and like we would want to be treated. And that's a hard thing to do, especially if they're your enemy. So you may be saying, well, what if this person just, oh, they're so, you know, they're so-and-so, and they don't listen, and we hate each other, and we're at odds and ends and everything. Well, let's look and see what the Bible says about that. Let's turn to Proverbs 25, 21, and 22. Proverbs 25, 21, and 22. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you. So there you go, black and white. It doesn't really matter if they're being mean or if they're your enemy. We're supposed to treat them like they're your friend, like you would treat everybody else. And kind of an added bonus, you know, if you guys have been fighting and fighting and fighting, and you start treating them nice and doing things for them and looking to help them out, that's enough to make anyone feel guilty. I've been in that situation before where I've been at ends with somebody and they've started being nice to me, and you kind of hate it because you're like, you want to still be mad at them, but you have no reason to, and so the guilt just eats away at you, and a lot of times it ends up kind of like, man, like, you've been so nice to me, I can't figure out why, like, how do you do it, and, you know, and a lot of times it can turn out being a positive thing for both parties. So that's good. And now I want to talk to you a little bit about, well, you may be saying, like, okay, well, all this sounds good, but how can I really go the next step and be extra kind to people and go the extra mile and start being just a better person as far as how, when it comes to being nice? I want to talk to you about maybe a new perspective to look at things from, because I feel like a lot of times we get so stressed out in life that kind of bleeds over into our interactions with people, and we kind of look for avenues to take our frustrations and anger out on people. There's a term in psychology called the protagonist syndrome, and it's something that I think most people have, if not all people have, and it's basically this: you view your life as this story, and you're the main character. And everyone else in your life, no matter how big of a part they play, they're kind of a footnote in the end, because they don't know what's going on in your life, and you know, your story is your story, and they don't know all of that, and they're just kind of there in the background. Well, that's true for you. You only know what's going on in your life, but look at it from the perspective of they're the same way. They've got a story just like you do. They've got things going on in their life that you don't know about that may be or maybe not be such a hard thing to deal with. They may be going through things you don't even know. And you can be that character in their story that maybe turns their story around. Maybe their story's going sour. Maybe it's really not looking up for them, but you can be that character that comes up and turns it around for them and, you know, just makes their life better. Just little things that you don't even think about, like handshakes, like, hi, how are you doing? Just acknowledging people and just doing things like that can really go a long way as far as making people's lives, and sometimes you don't even realize it. Another perk to being nice is just nice people are just better to be around. They're just more fun, and they're a lot less of a hassle to put up with. I'd much rather be friends with a nice person than a positive person than a negative person. One example of this, everybody when they're young kind of has these celebrities and figures that they look up to and kind of want to be like. And for me, that was Derek Jeter when I was a younger kid. And because I played baseball and I was into the Yankees. And I actually got to meet him. I was fortunate enough to meet him. We were down at Disney World one summer, and it was spring training for baseball, and they were playing down there at the Wild World of Sports in Disney. And I got to meet Derek Jeter, and I'll never forget. I mean, I asked him for his autograph, and he was just a nice guy. He took it, and he asked me how I was doing, and was just a generally good guy to be around. And that even farther boosted my level of respect for him. But I've also been around, you know, people I've looked up to before, maybe not in a celebrity kind of way, but I've been around people that I thought was just awesome, and then it turned out they weren't all that good, they weren't nice, and that completely changes your view of that person. So being nice is just, even from a worldly perspective, is just better for you. It's just good to be nice to everybody. And finally, I want to end off with a little piece of advice. To not get worked up over the little things. I was mentioning getting stressed out and how that kind of adds on to our negativity and being mean sometimes. And I want you to turn to Philippians 4, 6 through 7. This is actually probably my favorite passage in the Bible because of just how powerful it is. And as we read this, I want you to really let what we're reading here sink in and just think about it as we read it. Verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. So just think about that. All the little stuff we got to worry about, you know, whether, oh, the kids got to get new soccer cleats because theirs broke, and the transmission's out on the truck, and it's going to, you know, be hard to make ends meet. There's going to be hard times, but we really just don't have to worry about that kind of stuff because God's going to take care of us in the end. And just worrying, getting worked up about things. Sometimes, I don't know if this happens to anyone else, but sometimes I'll get in an argument with somebody and we'll be going at it and yelling back and forth and in the heat of an argument. And just out of nowhere, it pops into my mind like, well, where did this start from, or where did this stem from? So you kind of trace it back in your mind to, like, where the argument started. And it's like, well, that wasn't that big of a deal at all. And it turned into this big old problem that shouldn't have been anything at all. So just us learning to let the little things slide and focus on the things that really matter, like our salvation and helping other people get salvation, it will just open up a new, like the verse says, it's peace that passes understanding. People will see you and it'll seem like the world's falling down around you. And people will be like, how are you keeping it together? How are you so calm? All this is going wrong. And I don't guess any of us can really explain it other than God's just got our backs. And it's amazing what we can do. So in review, what have we learned tonight? Be kind. It really can go a long way. It helps people out in more ways than you think. Much better than tearing them down, for sure. And treat those who don't treat you well, treat them very well. And you'll be happier and live a better life as a result. I haven't really focused much on the whole invitation aspect of, you know, coming to Christ and everything, but I would like to take this time to, if anyone is going through anything and needs to come forward, don't hesitate. Mr. Channing gave an amazing lesson this morning. You don't know how much time you have. God's the only person that knows how much time we have left, so, you know, don't wait. It's not worth it. It's really just not worth it to wait. So if you will, please come. Always stand and sing.